days.
Ready to start. Welcome, everyone, and welcome our new members to the board. We'll introduce them in a little while. But we've got a quorum, so we can start. So I'd like to get an acceptance of the minutes and approved agenda. All those in favor?
Want a motion?
Oh, we gotta have a motion. Boy, I'm starting this one off good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Second.
Seconded. Okay, a second from Craig Wright. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And it's unanimous. Thank you. Our next meeting will be February 26th and on 2020. Are there any questions or comments for the management or board? Okay, we'll move right along. We'll move to number six, board business. And I need to recognize Sean. Roger.
The black shirt.
Roger didn't make it here today. 13 years?
14 years.
And Sean's been there for 14 years and served on the school committee for a long time, 3 years, whatever.
14 years.
Until it dissolved.
Yeah.
And he's been on the executive committee for a couple of years. And we do appreciate you. We appreciate all the thoughtfulness and questions. He thinks of a lot of things we need to talk about, but we don't know about it. I appreciate that part of you. We thank you for all your work.
You may not be ready.
You might make a comeback. Permanent. Okay, we're gonna do the swearing in of the new board members, but let's have them introduce themselves first. Now, let's start with Dave Geary, and he will represent Logan. There you are. Can you tell us a little bit?
And you have to speak into the microphone.
Okay. I retired, this is from a career out there in the city of Dallas. At the time of my retirement, I was chief financial officer. I worked there for almost 20 years, and then I spent 12 years at Logan Regional Hospital. Prior to that, I worked at the NGM Mountain Corporate Office as an accountant, and that kind of sums up my career. I have 2 degrees from Utah State, a bachelor's degree in accounting, and an MBA. And I have served on the board of the Logan Medical Federal Credit Union and some other public charities and entities, but that's probably enough.
Thank you. Thanks, David, welcome. Let's go to Paul James. You'd like to introduce yourself again?
I'm Paul James from Hiram. Little about me is I've lived in Logan all my life. Well, not all my life, because I've moved to Hiram. I've lived there more than I did in Logan, but I'm from Cache County. I was a plumber by trade. I went to work at Thycol in '83 and left about 13 years ago. I'm the director of facilities and operations here at Bridgerland. And I've been on the CVTD board before, the original CVTD board, when it was just forming. And I left to be on the city council in Hiram. Also been on a couple of other state boards for the Utah Building Commission.
Thank you, Paul. Welcome to the board again. Abraham Verdos for Logan.
I'm Abraham Verdos, representing Logan. I work at Eli Tech Group, a medical device, laboratory device manufacturer in Providence. I moved to Cache Valley a couple of years ago. and I'm excited to be on the board.
Thank you. Welcome to you, Taylor. And now Mike Arnold from Smithfield.
Okay, Mike Arnold, Smithfield. Lived in Logan for 30 years, so I was on the original Citizens Committee back in the late 80s that ultimately formed Logan Transit. And then those of us on the Citizens Committee became the board for the advisory board for the city. And then probably was on that for about 8 or 10 years and then went off. And then they combined with CVTD, and some years later I came on the board again for a second time, representative of Logan. And then we moved to Smithfield about 5 years ago, and Curtis kicked me off the, or Todd, not Curtis, Todd kicked me off the board, so I'm back, third time. Edward Jones Investments since 1983. And my office is next to Needham's Jewelry. We have my wife, Peta, we have 5 kids, 13 grandkids. And, that's me. Glad to be back.
Welcome back again. Curtis will swear everyone in.
We're going to swear you.
I'm swearing at you.
Yeah, I know, I'm sorry. Okay, so we'll have all the new board members. If you stand up, hopefully you have one of these papers right in front of you. You'll want to have it so you can bring those through this class. So I'll have each of you raise your right hand and then repeat after me. I, and then state your name.
I, Abraham Verdos.
Having been appointed to the office of board member.
Having been appointed to the office of board member.
To the Board of Trustees for the Cache Valley Transit District.
To the Board of Trustees for the Cache Valley Transit District.
Do solemnly swear that I will support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Do solemnly swear that I will support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of this state.
And the Constitution of this state.
And that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity.
And I will discharge the office of my duties with fidelity.
Welcome to the board. We'll have each one of you sign this, and then we're right in the back. You just turn it to us. I'll take it if you've already got a signature on it. And then we'll get you all taken care of paperwork-wise. Thank you.
Thank you, Curtis.
Do we get a gun and a badge? So.
Only first-timers. Yeah. Sorry. Okay, we'll move on to number 7, General Manager and Staff Reports. Jody with the update on the loop operations.
You guys mind if I sit up here just for this morning? Just in case I'm here for a moment or two. All right. Well, welcome aboard. I'm Joey Kendall, if you don't know me, the operations manager for the district. Todd's asking you to kind of give you an update on the new expansion.
So, we started on the 6th, thanks to everybody that came that day. Started better than we thought on the loop routes. We expected a lot more than what we actually went through. It went very well. Staffing has been adequate, with the use of overtime and adjusting some supervisor and dispatch shift times. We are still working on the ongoing challenge of staffing, and later on we can have some question and answer on a bunch of this stuff, but overall things are going well. I think the shifts are getting filled. There is a little pain, but not too bad. Public education went well the first week of service. We are seeing many people already experimenting and changing their travel patterns based on the availability of different resources. We've had some negative feedback about A, reduction on the Route 1 service, and B, there's no schedules. So that's a challenge for people to get used to. So the loop has no schedule, so when they call and say, where's our bus? We can tell them where the bus is, but when they say, when's it gonna be there? We don't really know. So that's a mindset change we're going through with people, trying to support them. One of the things that has been most difficult is the spacing on the loop routes. So we have four buses at peak times on each side, on each loop. So to space those four buses to meet the promise of 15-minute frequency has proven to be a little bit challenging. So we're using some resources. We have a tracking mechanism that we're using in dispatch. We also have some radio communication, but it is proving to be difficult. There's also the issue of technology to actually allow people to have a tool to track the buses so that they can see where the buses are live. We're struggling a little bit with that. We're coming along and making improvements, and the IT department has done a great job with what they put out there so far. It's come a long way in a month. And I think it's been about a month and a week since they really started diving into fixing some of the real-time data. Just to give you one example of something we've identified so far, establishing proper spacing at the beginning of the peak time frames, when that we already have four buses out there, two on each side, and we put four more out, two more on each side. Trying to do that in an official start point is also challenging because we never know day to day, or that happens two times a day, where they're going to be at. So coordinating that and then getting them spaced and in the proper place so that we can then coordinate lunches and things like that for the full-time drivers is another challenge we're dealing with. Excuse me. For the next few months, we're just going to focus on gathering data and spending the necessary time to analyze it and try to figure out action plans. We are spending a ton of time, and we have a lot of good people, some of them sitting here with me tonight, that are spending a ton of time trying to figure some of these problems out, find root causes, and develop solutions. So as we do that, we'll start implementing things and hopefully be able to mitigate some of these things we're seeing. I've got a couple other notes I wrote down just so that you're aware. The first week, and this is kind of baffling me, so I would love some discussion afterwards about it. The first week we got 6 complaints. The second week we got 6 complaints. Our average is 1 to 2 complaints. The comments were 10 to 11 each week. Questions, you know, how do I use this? What is, you know, what is the route I use now? Those types of things. So, and typically we would get maybe 3 or 4 of those a week. So we're just not seeing what I expected as far as input from the public. So it's really baffling me because we're trying to figure some of these things out, but we're not getting a lot of input, whether negative or positive. There are a lot of positive conversations going on, but we're not getting official feedback through our channels. So all in all, we think things are going very well. We're able to put the service out there. We're maintaining the frequency. We're not reliable, but we're maintaining the frequency for the most part, making adjustments through the day. But we know the reliability is not there yet, and people are still struggling with this change in mindset of, I don't know the bus is going to be here at 10 after or 12 after or whatever that may be. So I'd love to entertain some questions or take some feedback. We need more feedback.
What's your ridership been? Has it been what you expected? Or?
You know, I don't think we have enough information to even comment on that yet. I have looked at some preliminary stuff, and all I can say is it's changing. It's going from here to here, and the numbers are staying, it's dropping a little bit, but staying kind of constant. So we're just barely starting to see things really morph into whatever it's going to be, so that it's so new, I don't think we could really say what's really happening.
I mean, that's part of the thing. I think for the next few meetings, we'll have Jody come and give us an update, but we're only 2 weeks in, so it is really hard for us to really say, hey, we know this or know that.
So I brought this up in November, and I apologize, I sound like a running meeting here, but is there any way we could slow this down? This just seems nuts, running a bunch of 8 empty buses during emergency. I mean, I see next year, maybe we figured this thing out, and there'll be rioters, and it makes a lot of sense. but during January and February, that's a tough time in Cache Valley. Maybe we could just push this out a little bit further, or do fewer buses while we figure it out. I mean, March, push it out till March.
Well, so just so you know, I mean, part of this, what we're talking about is just, it's not that we aren't, how should I say? It's not that we're not figuring it out. That's part of it, is running it so that we can see the patterns of what develops, you know. I think there's been a lot of good education, but we're 2 weeks in. So for us to comment and say we know what's going on, I think that's what we're saying. We don't have enough experience yet. But if we push it to March, it still
is. It's much more amenable to figuring things out when we're not in this emergency season. I mean, you can't argue we're running 8 empty buses right now.
Well,
all day long.
Well, so just to be clear, they're not empty. No, there's times, and I guess I should have done that. I should have brought the video and showed you. The buses, we have times the ridership still is very much there. And so I don't want to give the impression they're empty.
So I took some exact numbers, just one exact number, because it's kind of one I'm curious about. It's the blue, and it's the blue one. So it's the AM, the first blue bus to hit the street in the mornings. And this is a completely new route. This is something that, it goes up 400 North, so that's a new corridor for us. And around so it goes up 400 North, across 1200 East, and then down 700 North, around the old Route 4, and then over to 500 North, and down that way, and then the Main Street portion. So I took the numbers, the day total last week, from January 9th, which was Thursday, it was 221. That was 3 days in on a brand new thing.
Corridor. Okay.
On January 16th, because that's about as far as our data goes, is last week, that's been done or completed and validated. January 16th, which was Thursday, we had 303 that day on Blue 1. So that's one bus on one loop, and that was the numbers for the day. Just to give you an idea of what that is, and that is the one that is in a new corridor. I did not take numbers on the green line, which would be our old Route 4, basically mimicking our old Route 4 going to the university. So that gives you a little data.
One of the things with regards to ridership, just that I want to reiterate to folks, right? So part of this was, again, responding to what the public had requested. We want more direct service. We don't want to have to transfer. So our ridership numbers are going to go down. I mean, they're just going to go down. As more people get on the loop, there's less transfers. And again, transfers, we're using the National Transit Database definition so that we're doing it like the rest of the industry across the nation. Anytime somebody transfers to another route, that's a new trip. And so we know that our ridership numbers that we're tracking are going to go down because there are going to be less transfers. But that's what we're looking at is, you know, where is it shifting? How is it going?
And I think the education side of this is going to take a while because these corridors and these options, and honestly, the more I think about it, it hurts my brain, the amount of possibilities somebody can do to create a trip over what they could 3 weeks ago. And I can't wrap my brain around it yet because you can use it in so many different ways. I don't know what people are going to do. I have had a couple of personal contacts of friends that I have, or my wife's friends, both, that have, they're experimenting with it and changing their trips on their commute, and you know, the feedback's been good, and they're trying to experiment and better their experience and make it more convenient for themselves, which once people catch on, I think it's going to really take off.
Just a thought, and I mean this totally respectfully, but I just worry if we take buses off. I know that if there was only one or two running on the loop, then the frequency of seeing the bus and being able to get on isn't there, right? And so for me, if I wanted to hit, you know, a few different errands on one trip, if I'm not going to see the bus as often, then I'm more likely to drive. And so while I see, you know, having more buses running and, you know, that impacting like the inversion and whatnot, but I just think there is that advantage having more buses. It's just more appealing.
Well, again, you know, what we see industry-wide is, that's why you try not to do pilot projects in a transit setting, is because people have to know that it's going to be there, right? So typically, you want to be at least a year that you're committed to what you're doing so that people can count on it, that they can know that that service is going to be there. So I understand what you're saying, Patrick, about, you know, is this the right decision? But
it's a fine decision. I'm not asking the board to consider the decision. It's just a horrible time to figure this out. Because I respect Jody. He knows what he's doing. But we're still figuring it out. We're running 8 buses every 15 minutes. Man, tough time to do that in Cache Valley.
Well, what we're talking about figuring out is very fine-tuning. I mean, and so... And I asked Jody, to be really honest, I want to be open with the board, but we're talking about fine-tuning of things. I mean, this isn't like it's a complete disaster. That's what we're saying, is we actually anticipated a lot more negative feedback and a lot more concern, and that's just not what we're hearing. So, is there fine-tuning that needs to go on? Absolutely, there is.
Yeah. And we are, you know, traveling more miles every day.
Yeah. We are.
But at the same time, I think it's a great time to get more people off the road during this inversion time. Stop your own driving, get on a bus, you know, so we can help that way too. That's, you know, our buses run clean.
Out, so.
Yep.
We've got to allow the people to have a chance to adjust to it. If they're not out there, they're not going to make that adjustment, I don't think. And so, as Sue was saying, you know, if they're going to drive a car instead, you know, if you're going to have 10 cars out there rather than one bus, you know, there's a trade-off. So as far as the inversion is concerned. And luckily, our inversion hasn't been as bad because of the storms that have been coming through, so we've lucked out that way as well.
Do we have any way to get data or have any data on not just trips, but duration or distance of trip?
Yeah, so... Oh, go ahead, Jordan. Go jump in there. I'm sorry.
We have a lot of different ways to gather data. And lucky for us, we're right in the middle of a sample year, so we're surveying a lot of routes right now also for the National Transit Database. So we hit the first of the year in a sample year, so we started sampling and doing additional surveys on just random routes, and I'll let Curtis explain a little bit more how that works, but if you have a question on that, because I don't know exactly how it's done and how they get their numbers, but it gives us a good idea of who's riding and where they're going, where they're on, where they're off, and all that data that we're looking for.
Their trip length, all of that duration, things.
Well, I was just thinking, if we expect the number of trips to drop as there's more point-to-point service, right, we should see a longer duration trip or a longer distance trip in response.
Less transfers, one seat ride.
Yeah.
For example, was it the same day, the 220 and the...
It was the same day of the week, a week apart. So it was Thursdays. It was the first two Thursdays.
For what it's worth, we've got a lot of clients that use it, they're liking it. So I've heard fairly positive feedback. But that's just one group of...
So to that point, and this is why I say this is anecdotal, that's what we're all dealing with, right? We're hearing a lot of very positive comments as we have conversations at Dennis and different things, right? We're hearing these positive conversations as we're out there at the transit center talking to people. Right now it's anecdotal because we're 2 weeks in. I mean, and so... But
I'd like
yeah.
to see those numbers 2 months.
Yeah,
months.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure.
That's why I say I think what we're going to do is for the next couple meetings we'd like to... have Jody come and we'll bring numbers and we can look at that stuff. Yeah.
The other thing that just it might be meaningful, the distribution of the loads I think is changing. So our crush loads, of course, are on 500 North and 600 East in that area during the AM time frames. And
can you define crush loads for them, Jody, so they can get an idea?
I'm out there every week, and the crush load is anything over about 65 people on a bus, and we have 30 to 34 seats, depending on the bus. And last week, there was we had over 90 on some of the trips. And so that's something that I think is going to be distributed now that we're opening another corridor. And so I actually think we were turning people off on the service in those corridors because nobody wants to get on a bus with 90 college students, right? So they're not going to choose to ride. So I'm hoping, it's my hope, that we just redistribute the loads and those peak times, and so that we have more capacity in different corridors, more corridors, so that then we can make it a more comfortable ride along with being more convenient.
That's what our planning and projection shows, and our relationship to, again, responding to these comments that we'd heard previously as things that people would like to see. The loop really does address a lot of those things. You know, I don't like getting on a full bus. That's what it should work. We're fairly confident. Any other questions?
Yeah, any questions for Jody?
Do we have just a number on the distance, on the average distance per ride?
I do right not now. Yet. I do not on the loop, and that's going to take...
Not on the loop, oh, just okay. In general, over the past year,
well,
2 years.
We could look it up.
You can drive to a estimation pretty easy because the old routes are all about 6 to 7 miles, and so most people would get off somewhere along that route. So that's a round trip. So the loop is 12 miles total. We just have to really survey down to what that answer is, and then, you know, see what the ridership patterns are, where they're on, where they're off. It's hard to determine even then, though, because you don't know what you're not tracking the same person on the surveys. You're just tracking ons and offs. Does that make sense? So that would be like a public survey that we've done in the past, asking people where they go to and from.
Doesn't our NTD sampling give us the average trip length? Yeah, so we can look it up. I don't have it off the top of my head, but we have the data.
How long would it take us to have? And
we can bring it back
like
for the next meeting.
On the loop, though.
Yeah,
I mean, the loop might take a longer time.
But we can bring it back for the next meeting. I've written a note.
Anything else?
Anybody?
Okay. Thank you,
Jody. Okay, we'll move on to the quarterly service report. We can all get that.
So in your packet you have on page 4 is the quarterly service reports. This is actually the year end. So this is actually the year end. So you, again, we've got some new board members, so I'll just do it. We have 3 years worth of data here that you can look at. The key metrics that our industry looks at. The missed trips and missed trips percentage are things that we look at. Those are trips that we actually don't take because the route's too far behind. And then you look at ridership per revenue hour. That's on average on every bus. That's how many people are on the bus in any given hour. So for a system our size, we see similar systems. They average between 15, 17, something like that. So even though we're seeing ridership declining, we're still, for the year of 2019, we're still at 26, almost 27 passengers per hour, which is a good thing. You can see, again, percentage on time, we're 97%. Wheelchairs loaded, again, we track that just for an on-time performance. Somebody still asking for the ramp to be deployed, or they're needing some assistance getting on and off the bus. So again, we track that just from a timing standpoint so that we can understand how many people are requesting that. Bicycles, these are just things that we track, and it helps us in route timing, because all of those things take time to adjust or to get on and off the bus. And then the miles between majors, that's what we used to call road calls. So that's if there's something that causes a bus to have to be taken out of service for a mechanical reason, that's what that is. So you can see that we finished the year in 2019 at about 15,000 miles between majors. Is there a question specifically that you want to discuss with regards to this? So
late trips are much higher than they've been?
Uh-huh.
Is there a particular reason why?
So really the late trips is,
this says 6 minutes or more.
I think, maybe. I need to look at that. But so the biggest thing that affects late trips is ridership and traffic congestion. So Route 6 is a great example. We've talked with the board about this before. There are certain times of day when school gets out that we have a bunch of school kids that get on the bus and they're working their way home. Along the certain corridors, they stop at almost every stop. And that really slows a route down. And then you add to that various traffic congestion. So there are certain times of day Route 6 has a really hard time actually making it on time, so it's going to be late. So that consistently happens day over day. So if you remember, we came back to the board, we were talking about should we address that, should we not? There were really two options. We talked about either lengthening that or cutting some service from an area. And we elected to let it stay while we're deploying the loop, just kind of what Jody's talking about, to see if it normalizes, to see if people maybe transition off of that to a different thing. So it's still one of those things that's an indicator that maybe we need to adjust a route. Maybe we need to adjust a route. Maybe this route just isn't going to be able to perform. I'm going to have to look to see if that's some type of error.
I think there's a formula.
I would tend to agree with you. I'll look at that because it seems astronomically wrong.
To go up 10 times from 1 year to the next.
It does seem really high. I'll verify that and bring back an answer for you.
Okay, thank you.
But just know that is something that we do see that has been a challenge on certain routes and certain times.
You know, it makes sense that it might have gone up in August, September because of all of the road construction. But it does seem way high.
It does seem like it's got to be something. We'll verify.
Okay.
Bring it back to you. Thank you.
Given the consistency of all the other methods.
Yes. it does.
There's an error there.
It seems like it. I agree.
Okay, any more questions?
Okay.
Todd will now go on to the Utah Transportation Investment Fund.
So a year ago, the legislature created this new fund. We're just in the process now. We've spent a year. There are several of us that sat on a committee. Jeff Gilbert from the MPO, myself, we're the ones from CASH, and then you have all the folks in the Wasatch Front and down in Utah County. We've tried to come up with how do we go about allocating this fund. And we were just really advisory. This fund rests at UDOT, and so ultimately UDOT, we sat and we gave some advice and kind of talked through the situations, and then UDOT hired a consultant to really kind of develop a huge matrix that would allocate or calculate a bunch of different things and then come up with some type of scoring system. So they finally have come to this conclusion. They've released the ability for us to apply for funds. So the overview is that this is a new fund for capital projects, so for buses, facilities, things of that nature. The entity that applies has to have a 40% match for that any project, and then they have to be able to demonstrate that they have the ongoing revenue to sustain the project, whatever that is. And so they just released the ability for us to submit applications. They were due on January 6th. So we submitted two applications. One application was for replacement buses for the Loop buses, because if you remember, we kept some of our buses that had met their useful life, but in order to deploy the Loop at the level that we did, we kept three of those buses, and so these would be replacement buses for that, for those vehicles. And then the other thing was the facility for a new administration, a vehicle storage, vehicle maintenance facility. And so we've submitted those applications. I don't even know the timeline of when they're going to make that decision. This is supposed to be a statewide pot, something for the buses or something like that. But just know this is a new funding source. It's competitive. So, you know, again, it's the first year. I don't even really know how to tell you what we're expecting. But just wanted to make you aware that we did submit applications to that.
What's the size of the pot?
So this first year, it's about $5 million. It's supposed to grow over time. They don't really know for sure exactly how that's going to go. This tax reform that was going on would adjust that. And so the projections are all over. We got to see if this tax reform even goes through. But this first year, they're anticipating $5 million. Okay. So it's not huge, but okay.
All right, yeah, go on to the next one.
So the national legislative update, again, you've probably all been glued to your TVs watching the impeachment process. It's really slowed things back in D.C. as far as that's the focus right now. However, our lobbyist back there has said that the last week of February, again, talk and update our delegation and others about our project for a facility. So Holly and I will be going out there, and we're hopeful that the transportation bill expires in September of this year, 2020. More than likely, they'll probably do an extension to get them through the election process. But a lot of work is done on that prior to them actually authorizing a bill. And so I think it's really important for us to be back there, to be explaining what it is that we're currently doing, what our future plans are, and that's really what we do when we go back. It's really helpful to have the board chair helping us to share that message. So I think again, it's a lot of time and resource, but we're always hopeful that it will hopefully pan out for us. So it's we're scheduled to go February 25th through the 27th, so yeah, last week of February.
Okay. Yep. Isn't our board meeting on the 26th? Isn't our board meeting on the 26th?
It is. So Holly and I won't be here. We'll be anxiously engaged in other causes. But you got a great vice chair, and we got some great staff here that will support you. So one last thing. I have a couple more things, but so this is called the Davy Award. I'm going to hand this around. It's a slingshot with a stone in it. So it's representative of David versus Goliath. So I'm going to read so that I don't totally butcher this here. So the Davy Award is an international competition which honors the achievements of creative Davids who derive their strength from big ideas rather than huge budgets. I'm just going to use the word huge. Huge budgets. Just as David defeated the giant Goliath with a big idea and a little rock, the Davy Awards are judged by the Academy of Interactive and Visual Arts, consisting of a panel of who's who of acclaimed media advertising and marketing firms, with panel members from companies such as Disney, Microsoft, MTV, Yahoo, and many more. So Rumor Advertising, who's been helping us with our advertising, submitted an application on our behalf for our website redesign. So we won the Silver Davy Award. The Gold Davy Award, just to kind of give you an idea, so this was in transportation. The Gold Davy Award went to the Pittsburgh International Airport. So, we lost out, but, we lost out to a pretty big transportation thing. But so it's kind of cool. Just wanted to let you know that we had recognize that. And we've heard a lot of positive things about our website. And we're still working. In fact, one of the challenges that we're working on right now with our website is we have so much traffic going there that the load times are slowing down just because of the numbers have just gone up tremendously. So we're working right now to put more resources and find a way to still make that quicker with the growing numbers. I just need to make sure we have an updated contact information or a contact sheet for you. Please just verify that that's all accurate. If there's changes that need to be made, get with Sharice or myself. And then we're sending around the W-2 signature thing. Make sure you sign that. And I think that is it.
Okay. Any other questions for Todd? Okay, then I'll move on to number 8, the update for the loop. I appreciate everyone who came to that and supported us. Mayor Daines was our first speaker, and then I had asked Jeannie to represent the board and the council. So she did a good job there taking care of that. And then Craig Butters, and then Todd finished it off. And so, and then we had the ribbon cutting and rode the bus, and Sean Bushman was our first drop off of up on campus with the loop. So, but he was sad that it had already started that day, so he wasn't officially the first rider. So anyway, and then I need to, let's see, we have asked Lloyd Barron's committee and replace Roger Jones. So I appreciate him doing that. We needed someone with a good political background, and I think he covered that need. Are there any questions? We're too early.
One last thing I forgot. Okay. So we have a loop beanie in front of you. There's two colors. There's the light blue or the dark blue. If you want to change out the color, get with Cerise. The PEP committee already got theirs. So, and if you don't have one, then let us know. We'll grab you one.
Okay. Anything else? Okay. I'll do this right. Can I get a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
Thank you.
Second.
All right. And we'll adjourn. Thank you. We'll see you next time.